Hi everyone, I'm Lisa. I'm a compulsive overeater. And wow, really humbled to be asked to share at this meeting. So I feel like I've come into the All Stars, you know. I've always really loved this meeting, but I can usually only get here when it's summer on my side of the world. Because otherwise it's 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm not great at 5 o'clock in the morning. So this is yeah, it's been really lovely to come along, and I just wanted to, you know, I'll keep it my share pretty simple. I'll talk about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And for me, I grew up in a family with two older brothers and a mum and a dad, and it was, you know, it was a tricky household to grow up in. My poor mum had severe depression, and she treated that with alcohol and pills. And she was also a compulsive overeater. And she had, you know, I think she had a personality disorder as well. And so she really struggled, and hence we all really struggled. And I remember growing up as a little girl with a lot of anxiety. You know, I was living in a very unpredictable household. And there was a lot of family violence. And I remember as a little girl when I started at kindergarten, and across the road there was a little shop. So every afternoon after school, I'd go over there and I'd get a big bag of lollies. And because I never knew what we were going to get fed that night, you know, sometimes mum would make, you know, a pretty decent meal, and other times we'd get a couple of boiled eggs, and we'd be looking at it thinking, oh, is that it? And she'd be really angry and upset if we criticized that. And so, you know, I didn't grow up knowing, well, what are we actually meant to eat? And so, sugar for me was a stable, you know, it was something that it kept me full, you know, and I was a skinny little kid. And as a little girl, I got into exercise really young because I must have worked out somehow that that's what actually made me feel good. At the age of 12, I came home from school. My mother had left. We didn't know where she'd gone, and she just left. And we were actually really relieved, which is kind of sad, you know. But it was, you know, living in a home where it's so unpredictable is absolutely exhausting. And so, anyway, my brothers and I, you know, my dad was a really lovely man, but he didn't cope with things. So he stayed away a lot. He tended to work from like 7 o'clock in the morning until 11 o'clock at night. And so my older brothers pretty well raised me. And they got heavily into addiction in their teens, and at 12 I got into addiction as well, and it wasn't just food, it was substances, and I was lucky to, you know, the when I was into my substance addiction, it was the food kind of wasn't really a problem, and because I was numbing myself out with something else. And then in my 20s, you know, I came into, they call it the beverage program. I was lucky to come into there in my 20s. But as soon as I got sober from alcohol, my food addiction reared up. It was huge. And I used to swing between restricting and then overeating. And I learned when I came into OA 5 years ago that I also suffered with exercise bulimia, you know, and I couldn't believe how much that manifested in my life. And I was doing my nursing training when I got sober, and I was in my second year and I was failing miserably, and I got sent off to a rehab. And I left that rehab and I picked up cigarettes and sugar again and exercise. And after, you know, my universe, after being at lectures all day, I'd go, and it was back in the late 1980s, and it was that time in history where exercise, like those aerobic classes, and wearing lycra and all that kind of stuff, which is an absolute nightmare for someone like me who, just wants to look skinny all the time. And
Sorry, that's
so I
5 minutes.
thank you. I used
Thank
to
you.
do, an hour class of aerobics, and then I'd go and swim in the college pool and do 2 kilometers, and then I'd go running for 8 kilometers. I've had both my knees reconstructed twice, and it was just like I was trying to run away from myself, run away from my life. And anyway, that kind of living went on for many years, and I knew that I had a problem with food, but I thought, why would God help me with just a baby food problem? And it wasn't a baby food problem. Like it was quite a huge illness, and I thought I had to, for some reason, my silly brain thought, you've got to fix this yourself. You've just got to get lots of, you've got more willpower than you know what to do with on any given day. Use it. And so I'd start off really well. I'd have a great breakfast. It would be healthy. And then it'd just slide down. And I wasn't so much a gorger because when I was in my 30s and I had just given birth to my son, I had a really nasty disease called ulcerative colitis, and ended up they needed to remove my large intestine, and that was a huge operation, and it took me a long time to get over. And I had this little baby, and I was recovering from this really full-on operation, and I just remember going into this black hole of depression, thinking, how am I going to do this? How am I going to live like this? And anyway, I made a decision. I was at that turning point where I thought I could just go into quiet insanity, or I could fight for my life and my family. And the fellowship, my other fellowship, really supported me in that. And anyway, the food, was there. I'd be restricting, I'd be overeating, I'd be restricting. I was a real grazer. And when I first came into OA, I came in and did a couple of guest appearances over the years, and thought, you're all nuts. I can't believe you've got this food plan going on, and you've all got Tupperware, and you're all doing all these little things. And I just thought, I'm never going to be able to do that. That is just way too hard. And when my son's 24 now, and I think he was about 16, and he said to me, Mum, please stop eating the way you do. Please stop eating all that junk. He said, I'm really scared that you're going to die. And that was a real, oh, wow. Like, even a child has noticed what I'm doing. But it didn't stop me then. This disease is cunning, powerful, and baffling. And it wasn't until during COVID, the start of COVID, I was at a spiritual retreat with a bunch of AA and NA friends. And I was whinging to one of my friends who's been in OA for many years. And I said, my family just won't eat what I want them to eat. And I've got to get them to hide their, my red light foods, which I didn't realize they were my red light foods. And then when they go out, I go and steal those foods. And they come home and they go, why are you eating our food? You've told us to hide them. And it was just absolute madness. And anyway, I was telling my friend this, and she said, you know what? Do you think you might need OA? Now, on that particular day, I could have got really offended and thought, how dare you? How dare you suggest that? But I was so sick of being sick and tired. And I went, you know what? I think you're right. And then in the next second, she pulled out a laptop. She pulled up the 20 questions of OA, and we went through them, and I answered yes, positive to 19 of them. And I said, that's not a good score, is it? She said, no, that's a great score, because that tells me that you know this program. And she said, are you willing to give it a go? She said, look, I'll sponsor you until you find your own sponsor. And I said, yeah. I was just at that moment, it was like God's grace came over me and said, for God's sake, will you just trust this woman? She knows what she's talking about. And
That's
so that
5 minutes.
afternoon as I left, thank you.
Excuse me.
That afternoon as I left the That lovely spiritual retreat, I stopped off at a service station and I got a big bag of sugar. And I ate that all the way home. And I got home and I jumped on an OA meeting and I fell asleep in a sugar coma. And I came to people saying, "Hello, hello, are you okay?" And I was so embarrassed and that I quickly just jumped off the meeting. And that was a real eye-opener for me. And so it was the start of COVID. And all of a sudden, OA and all the other 12-step fellowships became a global reality. And I got a sponsor who was in Texas, and she took me through the big book, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph. And it took us about 6 months. And after every chapter in the big book, because at first I thought, how am I going to get abstinent using the big book? And anyway, she was just amazing, this young person. And she was quite new in the fellowship, and I'd been around fellowships for many years. And I didn't care, you know, I just thought, and I prayed, I said, "God, please bring me the right sponsor." And I would never have chosen this woman, not only, you know, never chosen her, but she was just exactly what I was meant to have. And she, every time we met, we used to meet on WhatsApp. And she was in Texas. I was in downtown Barrie, a little country town south of Sydney. And we'd meet 3 times a week. And every time we met, she'd say, "Are you still willing to go to any lengths, Lisa?" And I'd say, "Yeah. Yep." Yeah. And she'd go, "Good." And she said, "The only reason I'm doing this is you've got to pass it on. I'm not going to help you if you don't pass it on." And I thought, gosh, this, you know, it's pretty harsh, but I needed that, you know, I needed those really firm boundaries. And she was amazing. Oh God, I owe my recovery as much as I can to a person, to this young woman. And anywho, so I got through the big book, and I joined another meeting in Australia that was a friend started, for people who were finding it really hard to find sponsors. And so we started, she started this big book, and we get people from all over the place, which is amazing. And I don't always get there due to my work and stuff, but it's you know, the amazing thing is I've been able to stay abstinent after about a month in coming here. And what happened is that, you know, I took time off work. And I went to all the Zoom meetings that I could around the world. I saturated myself in this fellowship. I saturated in all the things I needed to do. And I just studied everything that I needed to. I'm a bit of an overachiever as well, so I can go to the extreme. But that actually held me in good stead. And I ended up seeking the assistance of a nutritionalist and a dietitian. And she said, "Well, what do you think you need to eat?" And I said, "I wouldn't have a clue." And I told her what my past was like. And I said, "I've been in the health profession for many years. I've worked shift work for many years. I've lived on coffee and sugar." And she said, "Right, okay, we can start again." And she gave me the most simple food plan. And that is my safety. You know, I stick to that food plan. And my abstinence is really simple. You know, it's not a strict abstinence. There's certain foods that I can eat that other people can't, but I certainly can't eat sugar. And so there was, I was looking, I was doing a reading in one of the spiritual readings this morning out of another book, and it talked about that there's the power within me that is God-given. Is greater than any fear that's ahead of me. And every morning I need to have conscious contact with my higher power. I have to do that because for so long I didn't believe God would help me. And it's kind of like God wasn't going to help me until I got here because I can't do this alone. This is a wee program. I tried, I was out there for decades trying to fix this thing on my own. And I used to look in the mirror. And I had so much loathing and hatred to myself. And I'd say, you know, you're useless. You can't even fix this. And of course, I couldn't fix it. Like, I had this raging addiction. And it takes, you know, a global community, you know, to help me with this. And it's only one day at a time. And, you know, my family have been really supportive, my husband and, my children, and they've been really supportive. And I don't have to make them hide their food anymore. I don't need to, when it's Easter time and I've eaten all the Easter bunnies before it's even Easter. I don't have to keep going back to the shop. Like, I think I went back about six times one year. And, I don't have to do any of that. I have been restored to sanity just one day at a time. And, I look after myself today. I don't overexercise. I do some other things to the extreme, like study. I've been a bit of a study head, but, I'm at the tail end of a course that I've been doing that's really helped me in my job. And I've got a job where I get to serve people, and I get to serve the most marginalized people and, the people that no other people really want to look after. And I get to do that, and I get to do it clean and sober and abstinent. And that's such a gift. And I'm very aware that, this is one day at a time program. And I love that. I love the fact that this is one day at a time. I don't need to be worried or scared from the past. I've done a lot of work with that stuff, and I've been able to forgive and let go, just let it go. And I don't try and get frantic about the future, because then I just get really anxious. And so I like to stay in today. And my favorite part, my favorite sentence in the big book is, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed this path." And I never thought I'd get on this path, not in overeating anyway. And so this has just given me the most incredible life. And I have to treat it with the utmost respect, because will I pick up my red light foods again? I don't know. But just for today, I'm not going to. Just for today, I'm here and I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And I get to as many meetings as I can. And that's a safeguard for me. And that conscious contact with a higher power, that's definitely a safeguard. And I've made wonderful friends in this fellowship. And I've got my other fellowship too that I stick close. So I'm pretty well just said my whole life's all around 12-step fellowships. And that's fine by me. That is fine by me. These 12-step fellowships have given me a really good life. And at times when I get really worried or things happen in my life, I have a community to reach out to. And somebody said to me, "Lisa, if you can't pick up the phone and make a call, you're putting yourself in a lot of danger." So I do not isolate myself.
2 minutes
I need to,
remain.
thank you so much.
Thank you.
I need to stay connected. Thank you so much for letting me share.